Hi, I'm thinking of getting another tattoo to go with my raging dragon one.
Sure. What are you looking for?
Well, maybe something like a...
Bunnies! He wants a row of bunny rabbits with twitchy noses.
Your vote is your voice, so don't let others decide for you.
All holding giant flowers.
Who's that?
Ella. She works in the bank next door.
Make sure you're registered to vote. Go to checktheregister.ie and be a voter so that it's your voice that's heard. From Am Comisiún Toghcháin, Ireland's Independent Electoral Commission.
Too cute. And write Sarah on it.
Cute? I'm a martial arts champion. And my boyfriend's name is Jack.
Seachtain, an Indo as Gaeilge.
Time I mon iarrachtaí a dhéanamh teacht ar a chorp. Agus súlagam amach an seo, gur féidir é a chur in uaig ceart lena bhaintear féin.
Scíltaí, fios, tuairimí.
Tá sé dochreite nach bhféadfach ara i gcuirna meáin an cheist sin a eicáil.
Bhí an talam a gnám go raibh orthcháir na reachtam. Iadach sé tarraing go raibh an orthcháir san i lis dúthail agus go mbeadh fanacht gáir a chloig sár ducha sin éachar. Ná ní bhí ann dar d'oraigh sin, bhí marbh.
Seachtain, find us on all the usual podcast platforms.
The Six Nations on the Left Wing Podcast.
If they give France any momentum from in the tight exchanges, if they let DuPont and that French pack dictate the pace of the game, get easy momentum, get easy gain lines, I think they're so hard to stop. I think they could beat us. Those three parts of the game is where the winning is, I think, which isn't the glamour stuff, but it's the key against France.
It was a weekend of high drama as Six Nations 2023 kicked off with a bang. Ireland will be happiest as they top the table after their bonus point win in Cardiff, but Scotland are celebrating too after completing a rare Calcutta Cup hat-trick against England at Twickenham. And there was also plenty of drama in Rome as France just about outlasted Italy. That leaves us with plenty of Six Nation talking points to reflect on tonight and just as much excitement to look forward to ahead of what is another big weekend to come. Welcome to the Left Wing Podcast. Will Slattery here with you, and I'm delighted to be joined by Luke Fitzgerald and Jonathan Bradley for our chat. And Luke, we'll start with Ireland. It was the first game of the weekend, and what a game from an Irish perspective. 27 points in 27 minutes really set the tone. I know, I suppose it wasn't all positive. Wales did get back into the game, but from that opening period when Ireland really put their stamp on things, what stood out to you the most?
I thought the accuracy was brilliant. Kind of blew in the face saying, you know, how difficult it is to perform in attack in the early parts of the competition, you know, when you've got, you know, probably about eight training sessions or so. It's very difficult, you know, combining all the different methodologies and different things in different provinces and bringing them all together for a really polished attacking performance. And I thought, you know, Ireland were really accurate in what they did. I thought they were very direct. That hasn't always worked in Wales against those Sean Edwards-like defence. And I think that was probably the biggest, most glaring difference, I thought, between the teams, is that, you know, I thought Ireland bullied them in the first 25-30 minutes. I don't think I've ever really seen a Welsh team get that badly bullied at home in the Six Nations at the start of a game. And it was, you know, there's an awful lot of work for Wales to do to get back in it. And, you know, from the Ireland perspective, I think they need to be careful they don't get too far ahead of themselves. I thought, they certainly won't be bullying France in those tight exchanges like they did against Wales. You know, I think it'll be more of a kind of turgid affair and tougher to get those easy yards on the inside that make everyone look so good. And I think as well, the intercept try, it wasn't a try-scoring opportunity by any stretch, but that does still kind of colour things a little bit differently. And if they look back in the game, they'll see different things, or they'll see a lot of things, I think, where, you know, the Keenan intercept on the line just to thwart a Welsh try, and also the Porter holdout. That was a brilliant, you know, hold-up tackle. And then the James Ryan moment at the 5-metre line-out, line out turnover. So look, they came good in those big moments. That's really positive. But there is lots, I think, and to keep yourself grounded, I think, coming into a French match, which will be very, very difficult. That was a tight game over in Rome. But I think, you know, they'll be buzzing for this Irish match in the Aviva, and it'll be a very, very different match. And I think Ireland need to be prepared for that. Yes, be confident. It's a great start. But there is still lots to work on. I hate that phrase that nearly every single player that plays rugby comes out with in an aftermatch interview, but it really is true on this occasion.
Yeah, Jonathan, plenty to unpack. But one thing to get your opinion on is, I suppose, that fast start that's become a bit of a hallmark of Andy Farrell's Ireland, in particular in some big away games. I just, looking at it earlier, their last five away matches, 3 in New Zealand, 1 in Twickenham, and then Cardiff at the weekend. They scored the opening try of the game within 6 minutes on all 5 occasions, really setting the tone and getting 4 victories out of 5 in some very difficult places to go and really quieting that crowd down. It's a great thing to have in your locker.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it speaks to the work that they've probably done on the mental side of the game, the mental preparation, the work in those areas that they're putting in, because they seem to be at the pitch that they need to be almost all the time right away from the kickoff. And, we talked last week about how difficult it was going to be, the Cardiff factor, the Gatland bounce. And Ireland essentially just negated that with their start, because they sucked the life out of that stadium. And we know what the atmosphere can be like in that place when it's hopping, and Ireland were just so good to start that they took the life out of the Welsh crowd. 2 tries in the first 10 minutes, and from there, while the worst in periods, where Wales got in the ascendancy, Ireland were always in control of the game. And you think back to that third test in New Zealand, and a lot of the sort of better performances of the Andy Farrell era, that's been a hallmark of them.
Yeah, look, how difficult is it to hit that pitch from the get-go? Not only, as you've been saying, starting of a Six Nations, there's some teething problems, but just that has really stood out in those key victories Ireland have achieved in the last, 12 months or so, especially on the road, as I mentioned. It's just that they're so clued in right from the kickoff, and, punching in some really impressive tries. Like, from your perspective, you played international rugby, to get to that level right from the get-go must be very difficult.
Yeah, it is. Look, I think it's probably a couple of things, as always with these things, Will. I think the team is confident at the moment. That really does help. It calms you down in those big moments. I think they're very skillful. I was looking at the forward pack. There was very few at the start of the game. There was very few balls that they dropped. And yes, they were making ground. But oftentimes at the start of a game, in a Six Nations match, the excitement levels are high. Someone, overruns, a pass from 9, or someone's, fumbles a ball. They did very little of that. And I think that's something that they're really good at, when they are humming, is that there's very few errors that you can kind of capitalize on. And I thought as well, what really improved from November was I thought the accuracy at ruck time was way better. I thought the entry, forced Wales to give away a lot of penalties, put themselves in bad positions, which were very obvious to the referee. I think interesting to hear Gatland say he didn't have many complaints about the referee.
That's when you knew he was defeated. He mentally broken after a bad day at the office. He didn't even have a little one or two things to kind of throw in afterwards.
Well, he had one or two weird ones. The Porter one was a bit odd. I kind of get what he was saying, but at the same time, if Porter doesn't go for that one, even though he's never really going to get it, he'd kind of get given out to as well. So there's two sides to that. The rest of it, I think, was pretty telling. Maybe they'll find more as you look back at the game during the week. But, I think, rugby is so technical that you'll always find something that the referee missed. I think generally he was spot on with the momentum of the game, and he caught most of the clear pictures that were wrong at the ruck that the Welsh players were giving him. And actually thought he overcorrected. Ireland could probably feel a little bit aggrieved, I think, possibly at periods in that second half. But overall, I thought he was excellent. I'm pretty harsh on referees. I thought he was really good for most parts of the game. And I think that was down to Ireland's accuracy. To return to why Ireland are doing these things well, they didn't reinvent the wheel. A lot of it was one-out passes from Murray. And that's why I was probably a little bit critical of the Welsh team in my first answer as to why Ireland did so well. I thought they got bullied, and they never got off the line. They let lots of runners through their defensive line. Normally, when you look at a Wales team, particularly with Sean Edwards, and I keep going back to that, obviously things have moved on since then. If you were making a break, it was through brilliant passing and getting it to the outside. And it was rare that you made a break through the middle of a Welsh defensive line. And I thought that happened, so much at the start of the game. You think of even James Ryan when he gets held up. That's a really basic one close to the line that Wales don't cover. I can't remember who got the first try off the top of my head.
But Doris.
Doris, excuse me. Doris got that try. He was bloody everywhere in the weekend. But that inside ball from Sexton to James Ryan, that's really basic stuff. And
like trucking over
it
people.
Looked like an unbelievable line. It looked like it was James Lowe coming in off the line with the amount of space that he had. So I think Wales would be really disappointed with that. And Ireland on the other side, the calmness, the confidence and the accuracy really, really delivered on all those things. And that's why they look so good compared to Wales, who didn't deliver on any of that.
Yeah, Jonathan, one man who was really to the forefront in that opening, 25, 30 minutes was Conor Murray. Obviously him coming back in to the starting side late on with the injury to Gibson Park, with, you know, a lot of pressure on him, just like in November when he got that, you know, kind of call up against South Africa when Gibson Park was similarly injured. You know, how impressive was he from your perspective? He just seemed to be in total control in that opening period, but being kind of quick and snappy as well, which has been a bit of a criticism of him over the last period.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I thought he was really, really good, actually. I think, you know, at this time of year, there's always sort of talk about, you know, who are the irreplaceable players in the Ireland team. And you would have seen Jameson Gibson-Park's name on that list in a few different places. And to lose him on the morning of the match and to have Conor Murray come in, it was definitely something that I think a lot of people were going to be looking at. But I thought, like, Ireland's accuracy at the breakdown was so, so good throughout that first half an hour, 35 minutes. But Murray getting to the breakdown quickly, getting the ball away quickly, you know, there's always these debates now, I suppose, about Murray's speed of pass. But I thought he got there quickly, he got the ball away quickly. And he made the right decisions as well, because that's maybe a bit of that can be overlooked. But I think so much of what Ireland are doing is based upon, you know, the multiple options that they're showing in attack, making defenders make decisions about where they're going to go. And I think Murray just really, really nailed the decision-making part of it as well.
Can I tie in on that one as well, Will? I think, and it's a great point, I think, that Jonathan makes, but, you know, I think there's kind of a symbiotic relationship between you know, the accuracy at ruck time and the speed at which your nine and the good decision making that the nine can make off the back of that. I actually thought what was really good about Murray on the weekend was that he was getting the ball out so quickly that it almost forces the decision upon you. And I think sometimes, you know, if you're a great player like he has, brilliant career, you can kind of overthink things there. You can sit there and, you know, at the base of a ruck when the ball is available and try and figure out all the options. Whereas really, if you're in there, you're thinking about getting the thing away, similar to James Gibson Park. Yes, you get a few errors, but oftentimes the decisions look really good because you just have to play the first thing you see because the ball's out so quickly and all of a sudden the defensive line is moving forward. You've no choice. And I thought that was the great thing about Murray. He almost took the decision-making and the thinking out of it by being there so quickly. And the thinking was, get it away.
Yeah, it's a funny one because you could kind of look, it could have gone maybe the other way potentially had he been getting there quickly but kind of been a little more ponderous. It would have been so much more noticeable than it maybe otherwise would have been because the ball was right there. But if he had been a bit slower or maybe nesting over the ball a bit or, you know, deliberating on what way to go or looking right and looking left and then going back right, it would have just been really, really stark because of the quick ball that was being presented.
Yeah, and look, generally he was pretty good. As in, I think even when the times he did choose to kick, there was a few occasions at the start of the match where I was thinking, don't get into this habit now where you're kind of relying. Yes, your kicking is brilliant. But I thought he married the two really well. I thought he had a really good feel for where the game was at and how the Irish team were kind of, you know, what position and what kind of shape the team was in. I thought he chose to kick very well. Sometimes I think he can overdo it and maybe not trust. Maybe, look, it's probably a virtue of Munster probably not performing as highly over the last couple of years. You know, whether it's him being a little bit more ponderous or whether it's them not being in as good positions, maybe him not trusting them to have the ball in, say, the middle of the pitch and areas like that. Generally, I think Gibson Park doesn't overthink that too much. He just gives it out and keeps the thing moving. I thought Murray actually married those two things very well, with the balance more towards trusting the Irish team to be able to get a little bit of momentum in those middle of the park and not having him have to go up to the air to try and get momentum back. So I thought he was brilliant in the weekend. I'm glad you called it out, actually. I think, you know, he's come in for a little bit of criticism. Things are changing. He's certainly getting older. Casey has obviously come to the fore in Munster, and that pace of play is what's been emphasised there as well. And he's been, I suppose, he suffered a little bit off the back of that. So good to see him playing well. Great player for Ireland.
Yeah, because I know it was a different period of the game. Wales were in more of an ascendancy. You know, Ireland were maybe playing slightly differently because they had a lead. But when Craig Casey came in, I didn't think his decision making was as good as Conor Murray's. And he's obviously maybe usurped him to a certain degree at Munster. Jonathan, another player who, you know, maybe came into the game under a little bit of pressure or with a point to prove or certainly with questions around Ireland's World Cup depth as a whole was Finlay Beelam. It was his first Six Nations start. I thought he was really, really good as well. You know, obviously, you know, was part of a scrum that won a couple of penalties. You know, he carried pretty well on occasion when he got into the mix there. I just thought it was another kind of thing to tick off the list, maybe that Ireland can survive if Tadhg Furlong, he obviously isn't playing this weekend, but even if he was to miss a match of the World Cup.
Yeah, I think Beelam's been super, really. Sort of going back to New Zealand, like any time I've seen him play for Connacht this year, he's been one of their standout performers. I think he's played well for Ireland. And I think you go back to maybe this time last year, And I think the expectation in a lot of places would have been that Tom O'Toole would have become that backup to Tadhg Farrelly. Certainly in the amount of investment that it seemed like Andy Farrell was giving him, bringing him into squads and things like that. But Beelum has just really, really clung onto that shirt. And he's there on merit. You know, you mentioned playing the first Six Nations start there. And it almost came as a surprise that that was his first Six Nations start, I think, because he has been in and around the panel for so long. But he just looked like he belonged at that level. Obviously, I think we all know and all expect that there's going to be a much bigger challenge in Dublin against France this week. It's a different type of scrummaging side. It's a much better scrum, quite frankly, the French. But yeah, I thought he did really, really well as part of what is a really sort of promising, really 12-month period for him, I think.
Yeah, and even when he came in against South Africa in November, I think Tadhg Farrelly went off at halftime in that game, and you know he was part of a scrum then that won a couple of penalties. As Jonathan said, it's a huge challenge on Saturday, but you know, I have a lot of confidence in how he could perform based on what I've seen over the last couple of Ireland appearances, about how he's gone about his business generally with Connacht this year. I thought it was a massive step forward for him at the weekend, and he has been playing well, but to go in from the start in a Six Nations game is a different kettle of fish. I thought he was brilliant.
Yeah, he was excellent. You know, I thought he was brilliant around the pitch too. Some nice tackles. You know, I thought he had a lovely touch for one of the tries, lovely little pop. You know, almost got lost in, you know, because the try was scored just off the pop pass, but he drew in the pillar defender right opposite him, and then just a lovely little soft bit of hands for the try off the 5 metre quick tap. So yeah, no, brilliant bit of play. I think, look, the scrum of Connacht has been a strong point for them all season. Their stats are very good, very solid in terms of ball won and penalties given away. You know, you'd have to think he's a major part of that. So yeah, kudos to him. Not sure about the haircut, but I think everything else I really like about Beelum, and I think he's been, you know, a bit of a stalwart there. And you know, Tadhg Farrelly seems to be struggling a little bit with injuries here and there. You know, we hope that kind of injury profile improves for the World Cup, because there certainly is a difference. Just, I think, what more so what Tadhg brings you at line-out time with the height, and I think the bit around the pitch from attack. You know, it's very hard to replicate those things. I'm pretty sure he's
one of a kind. As good as Finlay Beelum has been, I think we can agree Tadhg Farrelly is a, you know.
But I think we talked about this championship and whether, you know, we would be able to trust some of these guys who are behind key players like Sexton, like Henshaw, like, you know, Farrelly. I think we are seeing that, because I thought McCluskey as well, we're probably not going to be able to go through every single individual, but he was brilliant too on the weekend, I thought. So I thought it was really, really positive in loads of respects. You know, we can trust the guys coming in behind those players.
It's funny you say that though, Lucas, and Jonathan, I'll bring you in on this one, because we discussed this last week about, you know, Ross Byrne, and you guys both made the point that maybe it's not how many starts he gets, but how many minutes he gets. And that was one thing. I remember I was watching the game with a couple of friends, and I was like, when are they going to make that change at 10? I think it was 68 minutes when Ross Byrne finally came on. And I thought he actually did play quite well. That's when good. He came. He kind of sparked that final try. He took one ball really close to the line and hit James Lowe with a really good pass and had a few nice touches. But Jonathan, were you disappointed that they maybe didn't bring him in a little earlier? Like, I know the game felt quite frantic, but the scoreboard was, you know, what, at that stage 27-10. I think if you can't trust Ross Byrne to come on at the hour mark, even then, like, I just thought that was a bit of a missed opportunity.
I felt exactly the same, but the one thing that I would be heartened by was the fact that he still come on with a job today. It probably looked for a large part of that game that wasn't going to be the case, but whenever he came in, Ireland still had to go and secure the bonus point. I think he played really well through that period in the build-up to Josh van der Vlaar's try. I think it was, he had five touches throughout that move. It was double-digit phase move. A really well-worked try, even though Wales were down to 14 men and allowed Ireland plenty of space. But I just think the fact that he came on in a game where there was still something that he had to add to the game, and I think he did add it, because I think you saw Ireland, they really got a good bit of control back into things during the period that Ross Byrne was on. I thought Bundyaki off the bench was really good as well. And I just think that will stand him more so than had he got maybe, say, 30 minutes, but if Ireland had got the bonus point already in the bag by the time he came on.
Yeah, don't disagree with what Jonathan said there. You know, I do, even though I would like to have seen him 10 minutes earlier. But, you know, what do you think about that? But also how he played when he did get in?
I want to give an answer, but I pretty much agree with everything that Jonathan has said. I did like the measure of control. There was still a little bit of, yes, they were down to 14 men, but there was still that little bit of desperation about that Welsh team at that time trying to get back into the game. There was pressure there. The crowd were more involved at this point in the game. And I thought he killed it off really well. So very positive, I think, from an Ireland perspective. You know, I think you can build trust based on those kind of minutes, because if he'd come in and capitulated, if they'd given away another try when he was on, there would have been a bit of pressure on. So I thought he delivered very well. I was really pleased for him.
What do you think, though, Andy Farrell's thought process was around that substitution, in the sense that, like, of keeping Johnny in so long? Was he? Do you think he's thinking, oh, we can only get the bonus point if Johnny is there? Or, you know, or,
I don't know.
Or do you think Andy Farrell had 68 minutes written down on a piece of paper beforehand and was like, this is when I bring him in? Like,
I think the knock played a part in that, Will. Yeah. I also feel
so
like...
So would he have gone off then? Would he have kept him on for 80 minutes or 78 minutes?
He might try and build in a bit of endurance into Johnny at this point in the competition, because he's played so little rugby. So there might be a little bit of that at play. You know, and I think, you know, there's two ways of looking at that. You know, you could probably, like, Ross Byrne might have built up enough trust that Andy Farrell thinks that if Johnny Sexton goes off after 5 minutes against France next week, that Ross Byrne doesn't need to have 10 minutes at the end of the game, because that's a really difficult ask to bring someone in that late in the game and get up to the tempo of the game so quickly. The positive part is he did bring him in and he did deliver, and I think what it does say is that maybe he's not concerned about who comes in after Johnny, or maybe he's a risk taker. maybe he thinks, do you know what, I'm going to risk it. I'm going to risk that Johnny's going to be able to stay fit for the whole competition. And that's just how I believe things are going to go. I don't think it's that. I think it's because he thinks there's enough quality there with Ross Byrne over what he's done this in a Leinster jersey this season, that he can trust him, even if he has to come in after 2 or 3 minutes if there's a weird knock to Johnny.
Jonathan, so obviously the French on Saturday, it's set up to be an absolute cracker. They had their struggles with Italy at times. They had built a decent lead themselves, and Italy got back into the game and almost snatched it at the end. They did get that victory. It's a six-day turnaround for them. I think they're spending the most part of this week in Rome and then coming over to Dublin late on. Like, where do you see Ireland in relation to this French team? You know, France, I think, have won, you know, they won 10 out of 10 last year. They've started off with a win this year, so they're riding high. But are Ireland favourites for you?
I think Ireland are just about favourites, yeah, but I think what's really interesting about this, and something that we maybe overlook maybe in past Six Nations, is these are genuinely the two best teams in the world. And that's not something that we often get in the Six Nations, because more often than not, you're going to have South Africa in there, you're going to have New Zealand in there. So normally, while we all love this competition and it is rugby's best championship, it's a real rarity that we get the two best sides in the world going head to head. And that's what we have on Saturday. So I have Ireland as slight favourites, but I think it's a brilliant game that we have in prospect here.
Yeah, and it's obviously, you know, massive for Ireland to win a Six Nations, no matter who they beat. But how important is it to beat this French team, considering they're the only team Andy Farrell hasn't beaten since he took charge? 3 defeats out of 3 games. More than likely, Ireland would have to go through France later on in the year in a World Cup. Like, psychologically, would it be a big blow, you know, to lose on Saturday, you know, in terms of what could come down the track? Like, would you, going into the World Cup, having lost all 4 games you've played against France, it would seem a huge ask to then turn them over in a World Cup in France. I think it's a pretty important game from that point of view, as well as for the championship.
Yeah, it is. You know, I'm not sure that they're the two best teams in the world. I do think South Africa play a part in there somewhere. And I think, you know, when they're all set, when they've been in camp together at a World Cup, I still think, to my mind, I know France are at home and that makes them the team to beat, but it's bloody close between them and South Africa. You know, I think at the World Cup next year, I think Ireland probably third favourites in my opinion. Sadly, we're on the same side of the draw as those two teams. But look, I think, you know, Ireland will, I think it'll be important for them to win. I think the old mentality of being the kind of underdog probably doesn't sit as well with this group of players. I think they'd like to have had a win. I agree with you coming into those. Well, you know, you could possibly be facing them, you know, after the pool stages. And I think they'd like to have a few, you know, a bit of their game plan work against this French team and break them down and say, okay, look, we can look what we did to them here in the Aviva. You know, we can deliver on this again. And I think there will be opportunities for us because, you know, if we perform on the day. And I loved, you know, Andy Farrell's mindset. I think, you know, that thing about the bus, he said, you know, I think this team will be, you know, they'll be able to adapt against, you know, an environment that is going to be very challenging next year if they do come up against this French team. And I think having something to lean on will only help that. Having something to say, okay, look, we've got a body of work here against this team. We almost pipped them last year in Paris, but for a bad start and a bad finish. We had the middle of that game. Now we look at the Aviva. There's loads of opportunities here for us to break this team out. And yes, look, we did still, even though we might have played well or something like that, we got a result against them. So they need this one, I think. I think it's important for them. I expect them to maybe come out on this just sort of, you know, I think it'll be a very tight one, because I think this French challenge is very, very different to the Welsh challenge, and everything about them, that pack and DuPont. I mean, DuPont, it just, he was so good. Everything that France did at the start of that game seemed to revolve around DuPont. Nearly got that block down try as well from the kick. Very unlucky there. You know, that front nine, because I'm going to include him in there, they are a real handful. I think Beelan being in is great, because we get to see him now against this French pack. They might even be a better scrummaging unit than that South African team. So loads to whet the appetite coming into the weekend. And I really hope that they deliver a performance that I think is worthy of the last year and a half that they've put in. I think they've been brilliant for quite a period now.
And Jonathan, just in the French, you know, how much significance do you put in their performance against Italy? You know, I mentioned they had a good lead. It was whittled down towards the end. Are you looking at them as more vulnerable now as a result of maybe not hitting their straps in the first game?
I don't know, because I think you can also look at it and say that there'll be no hint of complacency, even though they are riding this lengthy winning streak. And so much of what they did wrong, or what went against them, I think, was the penalties. Like, you know, you heard Edward saying afterwards that he couldn't remember a side ever giving away so many penalties defensively at the breakdown as France did. And when it comes down to it, like, so much of that is going to be interpretation. That changes week to week. It changes referee to referee. So I don't think you're ever going to see a France team give away that many penalties again.
But you might see them give away penalties, though, Jonathan. That was one thing that, you know, Edwards, I thought, what kind of had solved that problem, but they never were really able to stop it, which is, I think, a bit of a concern for them. I know, it is Italy, and maybe they'll be a bit sharper this week coming into the Irish game, you'd expect. But what did you make of that part of it? You know, I think we'd always associate that little bit of ill discipline with Welsh teams over the years, that little bit of lack of consistency. Do you think that's something that Ireland should be focusing on coming into the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, as you say, I think Edwards had seemed to eradicate that area that you would see as typically French, that ill-disciplined streak that they can't have. And he seemed to really get that out of him. But I think they'll be so hyper-focused on that this week. He'll be so hyper-focused on that this week that I can't see them being as bad in that area for a long, long time, let alone this week.
And it was a great opening weekend generally. Obviously, the Scotland-England game was an absolute belter. You know, talk about the new coach bounce. Like, geez, Borthwick and Gatland didn't bring much in there.
How about the old coach bounce?
But, you know, what did you make of that game at Twickenham? An absolute belter. Obviously, the Van der Merwe tries, you know, even the one at the end to win it late on. And, you know, Craigie Townsend, you know, he's gotten a lot of criticism over the years. His contract's up at the end of the World Cup, and there's uncertainty about whether he's being kept on or if there'll be a new coach there. He's beaten England three times in a row, their biggest rivals. They haven't been able to back up any of those victories as yet, which makes the Welsh game on Saturday such a crucial one, but still a very impressive victory.
Yeah, I thought they were brilliant and they were good for their win. You know, England have massive problems defensively. Massive problems. I think they really missed that two laggy Slade combo in the centre, and I think Farrell at 10 is a big problem for them. I think they're picking him in the wrong position, have been for quite a while. I think they're holding on to that New Zealand semi-final win for quite a while. And, you know, Ford is a different player to Smith, I think. Not as loose. Probably a better player as well at this point. I think Smith may go on to do great things. But I think he's still too small for international rugby. I think he'll have problems in different areas. That's a different conversation. I'm not going to get in that rabbit hole now. But that 10-12 axis is a problem for England. And I think they need to get more out of their defence. Like, great English teams are generally pretty stingy defensively, you know, and pretty solid. Didn't see much of that in the weekend. Lots of poor errors. And look, on the flip side of that, you know, Scotland were brilliant. Took advantage of it. They played expansive rugby. They were brave at times when they needed to be. And their skills were good. They took advantage of it. Like, when England made mistakes defensively, Scotland's skills were excellent. I mean, Van der Merwe, I wouldn't have had him down as an unbelievably skillful player. You know, and most of that long-range effort was pure, you know, athleticism. But there was a lovely little bit of that handoff, that switch to handoff.
Dombrandt,
I thought, was a brilliant bit of play. Now, again, we go to England's, like, chest out, you know, it's an awful miss as well. You know, to not have the inside hand high to expect, you know, a handoff and be able to knock that down, not to get the feet close, not to get the shoulders over the chest, really poor technique from Dombrandt. And it was that try was littered with people going off their feet against a brilliant athlete who's very heavy and very quick. Shocking stuff. So I think from both sides, you know, lots of positives. It was a brilliant affair. I was delighted to see Scotland get three on the bounce. It's kind of a weird one, and it really highlights that inconsistency and what that team is really capable of but just hasn't delivered on. And that's Townsend's biggest challenge, is trying to find that consistency in this Scottish team. But you can see the potential is there for them. So it's a banana skin for us. We think about that World Cup group, and we're all thinking that, you know, we've got that that quarterfinal spot to look forward to. I don't think so. I think that Scottish team is very, very dangerous. It could beat anyone on their day.
Two banana skins in the Six Nations and again at the World Cup, so we have to be very careful about that. But Jonathan, it's astounding to think Scotland have not won their opening two matches of this tournament since 1996, when it was still the Five Nations. And they have Wales, obviously, in Saturday. Wales heavily beaten by Ireland. It's, again, teed up for them to have that strong start. But do you think they'll be able to deliver on it this time around?
I think they'll be able to deliver on it in the sense that I think they'll beat Wales. You would imagine that they'll beat Italy in round five. I still don't put them in the same bracket as the other two teams. I wouldn't have them as contenders. And maybe if they were at a different part in the cycle, you might think differently. But at the end of the day, they're 6 years in under Townsend now. I think at this stage, we know what they are. And this is what they are. They are a team that can pull out these results, but they're not going to back it up consistently in the way that the really top teams do.
Yeah, like, it has been such a problem backing it up. You know, I'm sure you were in squads at times where, you know, maybe a big win was followed by a letdown in performance. But for Scotland fans, it must be so frustrating. And they pull off an unbelievable win in Twickenham, scoring these great tries. And then, you know, if they don't go out and, you know, put this Welsh team away at Murrayfield, so it's almost not that it's for nothing, but, like, you know, they've never actually contended for a Six Nations trophy. They could do it this year, but you have to put away the wins that you're meant to put away as well.
You do. And I think that would have been one they might have chalked down as a win, but they got it. You know, to have us at home as well, which is a big plus for them, I think. You know, I think that if you're asking me honestly about the Scottish team, I think the ill discipline is going to be the issue for them. I think you see the stuff, the off-field issues that they've had, you know, and I think you can see, like, you know, Townsend's obviously tried to, you know, implement that, tried to have tighter restrictions on people going out, all those kind of stuff, but just hasn't seemed to be able to work. And to my mind, that's a basic requirement of being an international rugby player, is that you can just hang on a week or two before when the competition's over, or before the 2 week break in the middle, before you have a drink together. It's important to mix together, but at the same time, it's important to be professional too. And if you've decided on rules, and it's a pretty basic, you can't keep them. You can't stop yourself from going out for a night. I don't know. That is the root of the problem for them. And that's why I think they are kind of an ill-disciplined team, an inconsistent team, so they haven't been able to deliver those things. It sounds like a basic thing, Will, but I always found that was the difference between us. I go back to my own career. You know, at Leinster, there was all those kind of inconsistencies, that ill-discipline. That's why we were an up-and-down team, a brilliant win against Munster away, followed by an awful loss away, you know, to an understrength team in Wales or Scotland. You know, and that was what I thought really changed. That was the discipline that Cheka and Michael and Joe Schmidt brought in, and that's what I always thought was the big differentiator. There was loads of talent, but in both groups, you know, with both of those coaches. But the periods before were kind of littered with that kind of ill discipline. I see a lot of that in Scotland. So I think that's the bridge for them to get to, is whether they can do that. Can they have that really tight knit, disciplined competition? I suspect they can't. you know, maybe they will be that team that surprises, but I think when you have those gaps, if you can't plug them, and they haven't been able to plug them for quite a while, you know, I think that's going to be the challenge for them. I don't think they'll be able to bridge it.
Yeah, the fixture list is actually, you know, pretty good for them in the sense that they obviously have Wales this weekend, then a break week, then they go to France. So yeah, at least you have that long build-up period of what is a very tricky game. And then you have another week off, and then you welcome Ireland. So again, you have a long period of build-up before the two toughest matches of your Six Nations. So it gives them a little bit of chance to prepare, but maybe more chance to go out potentially if they feel like having a drink. Jonathan, Steve Borthwick makes a very interesting comment after the England game, saying that he'd gone back and looked at it in November in detail, got all his stats from his statisticians, and that he said we weren't good at a single thing. So he was really throwing Eddie Jones under the bus after, you know, losing his opening game. But I just found it very interesting that he would kind of be so open or be so stark about, A, criticising his predecessor and someone who's done a kind of a lot in his career, making him his assistant coach, but also kind of criticising his own team. Obviously, we watched those games and saw that they weren't great, but to come out and kind of do it so publicly is an interesting tactic.
Yeah, I didn't really care for it, to be honest. Like, I think with the usual caveat of it's just after a devastating loss, it's his first game, emotions are running high. I don't really know if I see the benefit of what he was doing or what he was trying to do. And if he wasn't trying to do something, then it probably just shows naivety, I think, at this level. Because regardless of speaking about the data and the stats and whatever, and we know he is very data oriented, the headline was always going to be Borthwick, we weren't good at anything. Any context that he was trying to put on that was always going to be stripped away. And like you say, well, it's not that he's simply throwing Eddie Jones under the bus. He's talking about his own players as well. And I suppose moreover as well, it probably would have meant more or been more telling if he had have said that in any of the numerous interviews that he was doing before the game, not after the game. You know, after the game, it just sort of, to me, it reeks of, oh, well, what did you expect? You know, we're not good at anything. I can't work miracles, you know. To me, it just seemed like a very strange comment to be making after one game.
Well, it's funny because I feel like when he said it after he was hired, it was we weren't world class at anything. And then after he loses his first game, it's, oh, we were actually terrible at all. I was kind of maybe couching it a little bit and I wasn't. What did you make of his tactic or his comments? It's funny for someone who was being painted as a very kind of dull character compared to some other coaches. It was a fairly inflammatory thing to say.
Yeah, no, it is. And I think, you know, it's not going to be good enough for him to not be savvy with the media. It'll pile on pressure at periods when he doesn't want it. And when he wants the team to have a period where they're not being blown up by the media, it won't be helpful either if he's just black and white with the kind of data on different things. I think you need to be a little bit more subtle. I think he's definitely smart enough to be able to do that. So he needs, whether he needs some training or whatever he needs to get that, because you need to be good with the media if you're in a position as big as the English rugby coach. I think separating yourself from the team at this point is probably not helpful. I think you need to be doing that behind closed doors and pointing those things out would be my view on this. I think you need to have the group together at this point and working towards something, even if you've had a disappointing performance. They were still pretty close to winning that match, having not played well. And that's probably the line I would have had, saying, listen, look, I would like more time on this, not making excuses, probably would have been the train of thought that I would have been going. You know, and I think as well, throwing Eddie Jones under the bus is probably not helpful. It looks like someone who's probably not confident in their own ability, I think, to be throwing someone else under the bus. Yes, of course, the team is going to be taken in a new direction, but there was definitely a way you could have said that, and that's probably how I would have done it. I said, listen, we're obviously, there's going to be a period where we might not get the results we want, but I think in the long term we are aiming for a change of mindset, a change of game plan with the view to being successful and playing how I want the team to play and how I think the strengths of the team are suited. So I think there was loads of other things he could have said. That wouldn't have been the one I would have picked, but maybe a bit of tough love is what he wants to do. Interesting to see what impact that'll have. I think they'll get a bounce regardless because they got a loss at home.
Yeah, but it's interesting how quickly things can change, Jonathan, in terms of like the fixture list looked quite inviting for a new coach to come in. Scotland at home, Italy at home, week off, go to Wales, where they're similarly in a bit of, you know, upheaval, and now all of a sudden, you know, you're going to maybe presume they'll beat Italy at home at very least, but obviously Italy were quite competitive against France, and then you go to Cardiff and both teams could be scratching around for an important victory. All of a sudden the pressure's kind of piled on Steve Borthwick and kind of the RFU for making not only a coaching change but then allowing or watching as Eddie Jones goes off to Australia, potentially making it a World Cup obstacle. This decision could look very, very short-sighted potentially very, very quickly if things don't go well for Steve Borthwick.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do feel for him in that regard, because I think the way that the whole thing was handled was fairly poor. I mean, to have Eddie Jones in situ for three quarters of a World Cup cycle, to have a head coach who always says, judge me on the World Cup, judge me on the World Cup, judge me on the World Cup, and to get rid of him so close to the World Cup never really made sense to me. But even before Eddie Jones was sacked, it always looked like Steve Borthwick was his the guy that they wanted as the long-term successor to him. So I think to throw him in so early and to throw him into such a difficult situation with so little prep, if he was their guy, that to me isn't really backing him. I think it would have made far more sense to continue with Eddie Jones until the World Cup and then give Steve Borthwick a proper run at the job. Whereas now, exactly like you say, not even through any fault of his own, but it feels like the pressure could be on very quickly here.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting couple of weeks, and certainly this Italy game then becomes a lot more important than maybe people would have thought a week ago, not only with England's defeat, but as I mentioned, Italy's competitive performance against France. We might finish up with one last look at the French game then. Are you confident Ireland can go 2-2 on Saturday?
No, not confident. I think it is going to be a tight game. You know, they have an excellent kicker. I think they've got a very strong pack. That always kind of concerns me. I thought their defence was messy on the weekend, which is something maybe if Ireland can keep that kind of same accuracy, if they can survive at set piece. We've got a great kicker too, I think. You know, high percentage kicker and pressure at moments as well. You know, I think We can do it, but they're a monumental task. Like, let's make no bones about it. I think their defence will improve massively. I thought Italy's pack were actually very good at kind of the physical exchanges. I was really impressed with them at the start. I thought they were actually, most of the mess in the Italian game against France came from their backs, kind of big errors, kicking errors and things like that. The pack was actually quite good. So I think France will be focused on that, and that kind of concerns me a little bit. I think if they're stingy defensively against us, and they could be, and if they look at what Ireland did in the first 25 minutes against Wales, if they muscle up in the tight exchanges, you know, can Ireland change the game plan? Will Ireland have the confidence to continue to try and break them down there? I don't know. I think it's a huge ask. I think Ireland should do
it.
You sound
less confident than you did when you started speaking about it a minute ago.
I know. Do you know I do think Ireland will win, because I think at home we're so hard to beat. But I just feel I'd love to have Furlong, just even to have Beelum, the two of them coming off the bench. I just think there is a gap between Beelum now and the next in. I think Ireland do it, but it's really tight and it's kind of cagey and it's not the running rugby that we all expect.
Well, hopefully Jonathan gives us a little more of an uplifting prediction. But what way do you see it going on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, I'm loath to make too many predictions after saying how fearful I was about Wales last week. But, I think Ireland are going to edge this. I think it will be a really, really tight game. I think Ireland will need to do an awful lot of things better than what they did last week. If you go 46 minutes without scoring a single point this week, you're not going to win the game. If you let your game management get as loose as it did either side of halftime in this sort of game, I don't think you're going to win. But I think what this Ireland team has shown a real propensity to do has been to be able to roll with the punches, to the point where Andy Farrell almost seems to revel in that. So I think that's what makes me think that this is an Ireland team that can compensate for the loss of Henshaw, compensate for the loss of Furlong, compensate for the loss of Gibson Park. And I think there's so many different sort of subplots to the game, so many different areas where the game could be won and lost, that I can't wait for it. Like, I'm really, really looking forward to it. And I think Ireland will edge a close one. But I mean, if either team were to win this by more than a score, I think that would be a huge, huge statement.
I think outside of the set pieces as well, just to tie in with Jonathan's point, outside of the set pieces, which we know are crucial against France, you've got to survive there in the muscly parts, the maul, the scrum particularly. But if they give if they give France any momentum from, you know, in the tight exchanges, so if they let DuPont and that French pack dictate the pace of the game, get easy momentum, get easy gain lines, I think they're so hard to stop. I think they could beat us. Those three parts of the game is where the winning is, I think, which isn't the glamour stuff, but it's the key against France.
Well, I'd like to thank Luke and Jonathan for joining me tonight in the Left Wing podcast. We'll be back later in the week with another show discussing all the Ireland team news ahead of Saturday at the Aviva Stadium. In the meantime, you can subscribe to us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, and you can also listen on independent.ie. So until next time, thanks for listening and goodbye.
The Six Nations on the Left Wing podcast. Rate, review and follow the show on Apple, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.